What about me? Is it too much to ask for some time to relax with the woman I love more than heaven above?
What about me, my love? What about me? Can't you see, my love? What about me? Is it too much to ask for some time to just bask with a pen in my hand? No more husband demands. What about me, my love?
So, you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service, and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi innovators, it's great to be back. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I'm really stoked to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast today as my guest, Ali Skylar, who's a personal growth coach, an author, a business writer, and a songwriter. Ali and I had a lot of fun discussing how to reframe any situation to learn from them, to learn about yourself, and to make changes that will serve you well. We talked about lessons from family life and how they can be applied to business. We talked about Ali's musical, What About Me?, for which you heard a snippet of the title song in the intro to this episode. Without further ado then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Ali Skylar. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Morristown, New Jersey in the USA, Ali Skylar, who's a personal growth coach, an author, a business writer, and a songwriter. Her business is Sucky to Soul For, with the tagline, personal growth at the speed of life. So that sounds really fascinating. Looking forward to exploring that some more today. Welcome to the podcast, Ali. It's a privilege to have you here as a guest.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm very excited to speak with you today.
Now, Jamie Greenberg, who was on episode 117, introduced me to you, and you're Jamie's wife.
So I am. He's my other half.
Yeah. And he talked to me about you, and I thought, wow, what a fascinating person. It'd be great to have you on the podcast. So big hello to Jamie.
Thank you. I'll make sure I told him you said hello.
Okay. Now, you run a workshop series and you have an online course titled Transforming Our Crap into Holy Shift, which
yes.
is another really intriguing title indeed, and I'm really interested to learn a little bit more about that. But before we get on to that, let's find out a little bit more about you as a person and, before we get on to talking transformation and coaching and songwriting, I think we're going to touch on today as well. So when you were a young kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
You know, it's such an interesting question because I don't think I really wanted to be anything when I was a kid. I was more about opportunities that were kind of coming to me. I would just kind of step into the moment. So if I was into playing piano, I'd play piano. If there was a dance class, I'd take a dance class. I really enjoyed learning in school. So I was really just about enjoying the experience of what I was in at the moment as a kid. I was never really thinking about, oh, I want to be an astronaut, or I want to be a dancer, or I want to be a songwriter, or I want to be a writer. It was more about exploring what was in front of me right then and there.
Hmm.
And I don't think really until, if I look back on my life, I think I was collecting a lot of different experiences and information that led to the point where I said, oh, this is what I want to do, which was in my early 20s. Which was, I was an English major in college. I really enjoyed writing, and I wasn't really sure exactly where to go with it, but I ended up working in as an arts administrator. I worked at the Fine Arts Center at my University of Massachusetts, where I went to school. I worked, was mentored by the director there, and I just loved being a part of the theater, but being more part of the business part of putting the theater on. And then after I graduated college, I went on to work at ICM Artists, Polygram Records, American Ballet Theater. So I was very involved in arts administration, but I hadn't really continued exploring my creative part, which was a very big part of my life. I grew up going to the Performing Arts High School, where I studied French horn. I was a French horn player, serious French horn player, and got very involved in music. I was also very involved in art. My dad was an art director in for commercials, and we always had a ton of magic markers and all kind of creative utensils around the house. So I used to love to draw as well. So I kind of lost that a little bit after I left college and went into the business end of it and was missing it. And I started just plucking on the piano and writing some songs. And I realized at that point, I was probably 22, 23, that I really wanted to be a songwriter. And I loved children's music, and I wanted to write for Sesame Street. That was the point at which I was like, I want to be a songwriter and write for Sesame Street. And at that time, Jamie and I were together, and he was doing performance art. He had developed his own mime kind of life-size body puppets show that he had put together. And I ended up working with him and bringing all of my arts administration experience into us putting a business together, where he went out and performed and I helped to write the shows and manage the business and do all the booking and the sales. And my goal at that point was to do this business for about a year and then go off and be a great big star songwriter for Sesame Street. That was my dream.
Yeah.
Elmo and Grover, I wanted to write for them, and Big Bird. Those are the people I wanted to be writing music for, because I just love, I always loved the simplicity and fun and joy in children's music. I liked writing and creating things that made me feel good. So children's music and children's theater, which is what Jamie and I ended up doing actually for 18 years, was really what I enjoyed writing for at the time. So it ended up being more than a year. We did our business together for about 18 years, and we took our show on the road, and we did about 150 shows a year, and I was kind of back at the ranch managing and booking the show. And Jamie was out on the road performing for a very long time. And at the same time, I was writing a lot of music. I did a couple other tapes. I wrote a tape called We're Gonna Have a Baby before I had my kids, which was all about the experience of becoming a parent. And I also wrote another tape called, I say tape because back then we were doing tapes, not CDs or you know, iTunes. There was no iTunes back then.
Yeah.
Called Recipes in a Song. And every song was a very simple, fun song that was a recipe for a food. Like one of the songs was called Banana Shake, taught kids how to make a banana shake. Or Monster Mashed Potatoes, taught kids how to make mashed potatoes. So if they learned the song, they would learn a recipe and then could cook it. They could do it on their own. It was very simple. Of course, they would need guidance from their parents. And the opening song talks about don't cook without your parents, or, you know, I'm dead meat kind of thing. you know, we ended up doing a lot of children's theater. I wrote children's music, and we ended up creating our own business. So I would say that, I know I went kind of a long-winded way of getting back to what I figured out what I wanted to do, but I really didn't realize it until 22, 23. And then I would have to say that, you know, connecting with Jamie, and he was very much an entrepreneur. I was not. I was more in the typical somebody's got to give you a job mindset. I really wasn't I was very good at finding job opportunities and using my skills to get into places where I could use those skills. But I hadn't really thought about how to do that on my own, how to really create from the bottom on up. And Jamie really taught me that and exposed me to that. And together we learned how to be entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, in the theater arts business, which then kind of transformed into more the personal growth market as we got older and as we got involved in more personal growth teachings and philosophies, and saw that our skills could be used in a whole different field than just the, you know, the theater market.
Yeah. I was intrigued by that as you were telling your story as to how did you get into that personal growth field? When did that kind of realization happen that you could use your skills from theater and performance and songwriting? Because obviously you talked about children's recipes, learning recipes. There's there's a way to use song and music
to teach.
So, yeah, how did you make that transformation?
Well, you know, I realized that I've always been about family and children and teaching and fun. And I've always been about, if you make it fun, it's a lot easier to learn. And for me, the arts have been the way of making it fun, whether it's songwriting, writing children's books, writing a children's musical. I just like to make things fun and accessible. Jamie calls it, I think there's a word called edutainment, where it's educational entertainment.
Yeah.
So the personal growth market came about because I had my own crash. And I was at a point where writing started being the way for me to process the difficult challenges I was going through. And I started writing, and I started giving it to Jamie to read. And he started laughing, and I started getting pissed off because I'm like, how could you laugh? This is very intense stuff. What are you laughing at? And he's like, no, it's intense, but the way you're saying it, it's just, you know, you can't say anything even if you're traumatized without making it funny or trying to add some humor to it. So at that point, I wrote a book called Life Sucks, Just Kidding, which was a book of essays that had to do with all the different areas in my life that I was looking at that had to do with suckiness that was really kind of bringing me down. But I was also trying to figure out how to move from suckiness to something more soulful, you know, moving, transforming that suckiness into something where it was a learning experience, a lesson, something that I could share with someone else that maybe they could gain some benefit from. So I put that book together at Jamie's demand. He basically said, you have to write a book. And I'd say, no, I'm not writing. He said, yes, you are. You're writing a book. So, and I just have to step back a little bit because he's really been my guide in much of my creative process in terms of, because he's such a good business person and an entrepreneur, and he kind of sees the bigger picture of how to create product from something that is your own original essence. That I've been very lucky to have someone in my life like that. So anyway, he encouraged me to write the book, which I did. And then I did a one-woman show based on the book where I would do essays and so forth from the book. And then he said, well, now it's time to write a blog. You have to write a blog. And that's when we started getting my website together, and I started writing a blog. And then he encouraged me to do a course after a couple of years based on a lot of the experiences I had, but also in a lot of the things I learned through the experiences. And I have to also say that in the meantime, I was reading a lot. I was searching for teachers. I was searching for people who had been there before me that had information that could benefit me and help me move up the quote unquote transformational ladder so that I could take better care of myself and then eventually, and of course, in better care of my family and then people I knew and so forth, that people wanted to hear what I had to say. So after I did the blog and then I did the course, which is what you mentioned before, transforming crap into a holy shift. So again, there's seven exercises in that course all about moving, which I say, from sucky to soulful. Because I think it's one thing to get into the sucky place, but it's another thing to really have the tools and the know-how to move out of it into a place that is more soulful. And again, soulful doesn't necessarily mean happy or joyful or ecstatic. It can just mean peaceful. It can just mean accepting the situation. It can be a soulful place is a place for me where you be who you want to be with whatever circumstance comes your way.
And I liked what you said earlier about, you know, taking the lessons out of the experience, and maybe that's part of the shift that you talk about, taking the lessons out of the experience, and how can you
take those lessons and learn something from them that serves you and make some changes.
Yeah, and even I think for me, lessons, what I've learned with my experience, a lesson is not always like, oh, well, now I should do this or should do that. Or it's more about learning who to be while you're going through experiences, because there are so many sucky experiences that sometimes we can't change. It's not about fixing the experience. For me, what I've learned, if anything, it's about learning how to be with these experiences. I think that's where the lessons are, is learning who you are on a more deeper level and a more soulful, spiritual level that allows you to go through this life journey in a more graceful way.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And I was thinking earlier when I asked you the question about what did you want to be when you grew up, and you talked about enjoying the experiences and not really looking forward to something growing up. And I thought, yeah, we're all actually conditioned. I mean, I asked that question of most guests, and yet we're all conditioned. We used to ask our kids that. And I remember my daughter saying to me, well, I already am someone. And I thought, you know, and I remember that, and I thought, well, that's pretty good, because you are, you know. And
yeah, and that's great.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't really matter what changes happen over the course of life, because we all are someone. So I was reminded of that when you mentioned, you know, enjoying the experience. And I wonder how much that programming or that mindset plays into this when we get into perhaps difficult situations later on in life, and we just forget that we can just be who we are.
It's a good point. And the question, I think, is not so much what do you want to be when you grow up, but what do you want to do?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when we ask the questions, who do you want to be or what do you want to be? I think that's where the problem comes in, you know? And I think too, that when you ask a kid that, what do you want to do when you grow up? You know, kids are all about exploration, and they're all about newness, and they're all about like being curious. And to just ask them to do one thing, I just think is very limiting, because like, why can't I want to grow up and do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? Why do I have to just pick one thing, like an astronaut? I mean, my daughter came in and she knew by the time she was 2 or 3, she wanted to be a musical theater performer. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. You know, that's what she knew she wanted to be. My son came in and he was like me. He tried out all these different things, you know, until he got to the point where he was in his teens where it's like, oh, now this is what I want to do. He had to try a lot of different stuff before he started to figure out like maybe one or two areas where he wanted to focus. But I agree with you. I think there's too much pressure put on people and kids in particular to choose one thing or to choose what they want to be. And how can you know when you're like that young?
That's right.
Like most people don't. I mean, my daughter does, and I'm sure there are plenty of people that do. But, you know, I think a lot of people come in and they're not really sure. And I think that's why a lot of high school kids are not very happy either. Because, you know, they're supposed to pick something and go to college for something. And, you know, I think high school is more of a time, and I think it's more of a time of exploration as well.
That's right. And also, I think, you know, the focus on that kind of thing, there's a big risk, and, you know, we see it happen all the time, that people lose that sense of curiosity and that exploration sense. You know, that some people are just kind of in their particular track, whatever that may be, and there's no creativity or no exploration around, you know, what else is there, or what, how could I make this different, or how could I make a bigger contribution?
Yeah, or bigger contribution to who I am too, you know, big, like who am I? I mean, there's so many parts of us that take time to really learn about and figure that they're even there, you know, like, you know, you don't know there's parts of yourself, like parenting. I'm sure you've experienced this too. There's so many parts of myself that have come out as a result of parenting that I never would have known were there unless I had become a parent. That experience pulled those parts out of me. Being a wife, being a entrepreneur, being a daughter. There's all these different experiences we have that pull different parts of us out. So
that's right. Yeah. And so all those experiences add up to make us who we are.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Now,
and really, how many of us, when we think about what you want to be when you grow up or how you want to do it, the expectations of how it's supposed to be, does it ever really happen that way? I mean, there's like so many I don't know anybody that's had a vision of how it's going to be and it turns out exactly that way. There's so many things that come into play that we may not be aware of that can help us get what we want to get, but are not part of our story or expectation from
the get-go. That's right. I mean, you know, thinking back to when I was a child, I mean, who knew that the internet was going to be around? Who knew that we could get on a machine in our own little home and speak to somebody halfway around the world live
and see
them on camera? Yeah. So, So there's lots of stuff happening. Now, the book you wrote, you've now transformed that into a musical or expanded, whatever the right word is.
I would say that, yes, it started out, my writing of this musical really started out 10 years ago when I wrote my book, Life Sucks, Just Kidding. The musical name now, I've actually just changed it to What About Me?
Okay.
But it started out with, I would say that my musical is a combination of everything I've done up into my life, because the story really is all about people finding their way, making their dreams come true, seeing how far that they will go, what they'll sacrifice in order to make those dreams come true. So it is, to me, very much a culmination of everything I've done in my life, whether it's songwriting, book writing, composing, dealing with themes of family, dealing with themes of individual expression, dealing with how do you balance, you know, manage your relationships while you're also trying to create a life for yourself based on your passion and your purpose.
Now, I'm going to try something here that I haven't done on the podcast before. I'm not sure it'll work, so we may have to edit this out if it backfires. But okay. I thought this would be a nice little touch, so bear with me.
Sure.
Fair. This isn't right. This is my time to shine my light. Go away, leave me alone. Can't you see I'm in the zone? It's frustrating, so frustrating. Life sucks. It's frustrating, so frustrating. Life sucks. Not a moment to rest, swatting family like they're pests. I'm so distressed.
Okay, so hopefully that worked. I was actually going to press the What About Me song. I must have hit the wrong one.
Oh.
But I thought it'd be worth just playing an excerpt from the song there, because
you have
samples online and I love them. I think it's fabulous. So
for that. That's so kind of you.
Good to share those.
Yeah, that's the opening number of the show, and it's all about this woman, Julie, who's in her late 40s. And she's on the verge of an existential suburban breakdown. So she goes to this personal growth retreat weekend. And when she comes back, she's so pumped up from the experience, she decides to quit her job and write a musical. She's wanted to write a musical since she was a kid, never had the chance. You know, she's been raising a family for 25 years. And then the story is all about the chaos and the craziness that ensues once she makes this big, incredible change with her family. And it's funny, it's humorous, it's heartwarming, and it explores the relationships that she has with her husband, with her daughter, with her son, with her father. And it's really, to me, it's based on my life. It's based on a lot of the themes that have come up in my life. Of course, the kids are not exactly my kids. My dad's not still around. The husband in this show, Max, is very much against Julie quitting her job to write a musical. They have two kids. One of her daughters out in New York trying to make it as a musical theater person and struggling and, you know, eating from hand to mouth. Her son's about to go to college. Her son is 16, 17. Her daughter is in her early 20s. And the husband's like freaking out. He's like, what are you doing? You can't do this right now. We can't live on my income alone. So the story is all about the tension that ensues and builds between this couple. And which is very different than my life, because I have a husband who's incredibly supportive and who has been helping me and guiding me along to build up my creative life here. So again, let's exactly what I'm saying. The characters are not totally based on my life, but Max in this movie, in this show, is an antagonist to Julie's decision. And the thing that I think is very important about the storyline is that we want to root for Julie. We want her to write her musical. We want her to have her time. But there's also the storyline here that she does it without really consulting her husband, bringing her kids in. You know, she just kind of freaks everyone out. I mean, they're used to having her for 25 years do things a certain way. And then she just shifts like 360 degrees.
Yeah.
And she doesn't really bring them along. And her father, his name is Poppy, has this beautiful song that I love called Guide Them. And he talks to her exactly about this, that, you know, she can't just expect that they're just going to all fall into place and support her and do what they need to do, because she hasn't really taught them how to do that. She hasn't really allowed them and showed them to be more independent without her. So there is, as much as we root for Julie, we also see Julie's kind of fatal flaw, where she hasn't really included her family in her new journey and brought them along in a way so that everybody can benefit as well and grow from the fact that she's changing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And as I say, I really love the music that I've heard. So I definitely encourage people to check out your website. We'll have links to it in the show notes and listen to the rest of those. And and so do you use the musical or kind of bits of that story in your coaching? Because you talked a lot about, you know, people making a transformation and how important it is to bring the people in their lives along that journey, or at least, you know, make sure that they're not sacrificing relationships because their journey is changing.
Yeah, it's a big theme of mine. Parenting is a big theme of mine. If you look at my website too, I call it Parenting at the Speed of Life as well, personal growth and parenting at the speed of life, because I think it's very important for us to validate how challenging it is to be a parent. And as much as there is work out there about, you know, supporting the children and supporting their growth, I think it's really essential to support the parent. And when I speak to parents or do coaching, it is about finding little steps, little shifts that they can make, more so in their perception of what's going on than in about action-oriented steps, like going out and getting a new job or going out and taking 3 hours to, you know, go take a massage or whatever. It's more about shifting your head and your mind. For instance, one of the things that I do talk about in my coaching is it's not about changing your children. It's really not about changing their behaviors. It's not about making them do something different. It's not about changing them as people. It's about how you're responding to your children in every moment, because that's where our power lies in terms of who we can be. It's like what we were talking about before, who you can be in each moment. So I do talk about that with parents, and I think the balance comes from learning how to set boundaries for yourself, being able to be there for your family, and also being able to be there for yourself, and learning where that line is, and learning how to shift from being in a reactionary place to a more responsive place. And that's kind of where my shiftitudes come into place too, which is a big part of my show, because Julie's very into writing these shiftitudes, which are acronyms that I've created that help someone shift from sucky to soulful. For example, one of my favorite shiftitudes that I share with parents is the shiftitude for the word no, which I have created the acronym Nourish Oneself. I think a lot of us as parents have a hard time saying no to our kids and no to things that come up. And when you kind of shift your perception about what the word no means, it allows you to step into a different place that allows you to then make more positive choices that work for both you and the people involved in the situation.
That's a beautiful reframe. And you're right, because I guess the musical, the example in that, from what you've said, is that Julie hasn't set the personal boundaries, and then all of a sudden she makes this big shift where she's needing to set a whole lot of personal boundaries, and all of a sudden people are kind of like, this is disrupting everything. Whereas, you know, setting those personal boundaries in a smaller way to look after yourself first, and then enable you to be the best parent in that example.
The way that Julie learns it is not through listening to her father, who really was, you know, right on target, but she's writing this musical, which is based on her daughter's life. The musical is about these two young musical theater performers trying to make it in the business. And her character's name is Kate. And Kate ends up later in the show kind of going rogue. And she starts to rewrite the show in the way that Kate starts to rewrite the show, taking it away from Julie. Kate kind of comes to life and becomes this, you know, the character that Julie can speak to. She becomes a bigger than life character. So when Kate starts to take the show away from Julie and do her own thing and not listen to what Julie is writing, you know, and Kate is so set on getting her way, Julie starts to see that that could be what she's possibly doing with her family. So she learns through this rogue character, you know, she has this epiphany at the end that, oh, this is what could be happening here. And it kind of helps her shift into a new way to work with her family.
Yeah.
And I always find it very, I love to watch movies or read books or read stories where you see this character go through this transformation and kind of have these new epiphanies and grow into this new way of thinking and perceiving the circumstances around them in a more positive way.
And I love, you know, I don't know the entire story, but from what you've told me today and from what I've read on your blog, I love that there's so many metaphors built into that that you can use in business, which is quite good. You know, you talked about Julie seeing in Kate it's kind of a mirror of herself.
Her.
So and she's probably suddenly realizes, wow, this is really annoying me, and maybe it's something that I'm doing, and I have to address that in myself. Mm.
Well, I think too that, you know, when Julie goes out and runs to write a musical, she becomes an entrepreneur. Really, in her own, she's creating her own business. And I think that one of the things that's very important about being your own business person is that we forget sometimes that we're not alone. You know, even though we're sitting in our office doing our own thing at times, and as a writer, you spend a lot of time on your own, there's still people around you that are being affected by what you do. And I think if you go into any kind of business remembering that, then it allows you to work with people in a much more effective, authentic, and productive way.
Yeah.
Because when you think about it, your family is really a business. You know? I mean, Jamie and I have created a family business here. Because, you know, the way that you learn how to deal with your kids, and sometimes your kids don't want to do what you want to say, just the way you have a client that may not be listening to you and doesn't want to do it the way you, you know, it's learning how to be persuasive. Yeah. It's learning your timing. Like, I have to really sometimes pick my times when I talk to my kids about things. I've got to watch them and see, oh, is this the right time to talk to them about, you know, don't leave your dishes in the sink when they're running out the door to a job and they're freaking, you know. It's the same thing with clients. You know, it's finding the right time. It's seeing people for who they are and being able to work with them in a way that you understand how they move, how they think, how they, you know, how they function in the world, so that you can find a way to mesh with that and create results.
And also, I mean, the other one that struck a chord with me is, you know, when you talked about Julie and Kate's interaction later in the story, the fact that the things that annoy you most in others are often the things that are happening in your life, shall we say.
Yes.
And to kind of reflect on that and really, really become self-aware is, you know, am I having that impact on other people? And is that serving me or is that serving them?
Yeah, and you know too, when you're doing your own business as an entrepreneur, that's a very important skill to have. It allows you to really connect with a client in a much deeper and much more effective way, I think, too.
Mm. All right. So what are the plans for the musical? Are we going to see it performed somewhere?
Well, yes, I'm hoping. I've done a couple of readings. For a musical, there's a process, basically. You do readings where you kind of get together with people, read the script. Then you do either a workshop or you do a showcase where you kind of bring it on the stage. And you can do something called a staged reading, which I did as well at the Women's Theater Company here in New Jersey, where the actors came and they had their scripts and we performed it for an audience. So we got audience response and feedback to the show. And then after that, I did a showcase where the actors were, as we call, off book, meaning that they didn't have the scripts in front of them, where we were able to see the show with the music, with an audience, and then get a feedback from that. Now, the next step for me is to, I have two steps, actually. This is really a personal growth show that I feel will do really well in a personal growth market. So I'm going to pursue selling this show to cruises that have personal growth events, to retreats, to personal growth venues, like if there's three-day workshops going on, a place where we can perform this show as an entertainment piece for people who are attending, you know, workshops, retreats, cruises, and so forth. So that's going to be my kind of unique marketing, my unique marketing steps to get this show out on the road. The other step, which is a much more conventional way, is to try to find a producer, investors, people that can help me by raising money to create a reading of the show in the city where you can then invite producers and you can invite people in the industry down to see the show. So hopefully a theater might pick it up and want to produce it or put it on. Or it can get picked up by an investment person that can help raise money to perhaps, you know, do the shows in some small theaters around the country. So there's two different avenues I'm kind of going down with right now. But I would say that the most important thing right now for me is to try to find someone in the industry who believes in the project, has money, is willing to help me get this out into either the personal growth market or into like an off-Broadway kind of situation, or a, you know, a regional theater tour where you would take it around to different theaters around the country. So that's my next step. It's a long process. I've been doing this now for close to probably about 4 years.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I did it in combination with my work as a content marketing person, working with Jamie, with, you know, our business, A Brand New Way, doing my blog, working with that, doing my coaching. So the musical has been one of the projects that I've been working on.
Hmm. Well, it certainly sounds fascinating. And I guess the journey
continues
and yeah, there's still quite a bit to do to get it into the public domain.
Yes,
fully. But yeah, I'm interested in the idea of having it as part of edutainment, I think is the word you used for,
yes,
for retreats and,
yeah,
you know,
me too,
sort of growth events, because I could see that working really well.
That too will allow me to develop a business model with the show that allows me to be in control of the show. Once I go into a more traditional theater situation, then, you know, there's all these legal ramifications of the writer gets this percentage and that percentage, and then the producer does this and the director wants this. So it becomes more, it gets out of my hands in a different kind of way, which I'd be very excited if it did. I don't have a problem with that, but for me, if I do get it out into the personal growth market, it's very similar to what Jamie and I did for our kids theater when we first started that many, many years ago, where we had a show and then we had to market it and sell it. And eventually we were, you know, performing it around the country at 150 shows a year at theaters, schools, performing arts centers. So that's a similar thing I'm trying to do here with the musical, so that I have a little bit more ownership of it and the ability to kind of put it in a place that I have some control over where it goes and how it's performed and how it gets out to the public.
Hmm. All right. Well, this has been really fascinating. I could talk for ages about exploring ways to to promote the show and what we could come up with there for marketing strategies and so on. But I respect your time, so I'd like to move on to the Buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, to learn from some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions. I'm sure you've heard them in Jamie's interview, and hopefully we'll get some really insightful answers from you.
Cool. I will do my best.
Okay. So what's the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative or more creative?
I would say trust your gut.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us question when ideas come to us. We go into our head instead of sticking in our gut. So I would say trust your gut and write down everything. You know, write down all your ideas. Like Jamie and I write everything down. We just create a pool. We create a basket of all these different ideas, because sometimes you never know when you might need one of those. You know, we like to create a place where we can pull things out of if we need them in the moment. Keep creating, keep writing it down, get your genius and notate it, and
visit those jottings frequently to get ideas. That's such a great way to do things, and I've started doing more. I'm a really keen photographer, but I never really thought of this until one of my guests said, you know, anything that kind of takes your fancy, just take a photograph of it and add it to that particular file and sketch things out and so on. And the getting more visual about some of those things really adds to that process, I think.
Yeah. And I think too, for me as a writer, I need to, it's funny because I don't have, like, you know, people sit down and they meditate and they see all these, you know, temples and the ocean, and I'm not a real visual person in my head. But if I start writing something with my hand, all of a sudden I can start to see images.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know that for me, writing is a very powerful way in which I can ignite innovation, and I can ignite thoughts and things that I may not know are there until I start putting pen to hand or computer to hand.
Hmm. All right. Well, maybe that's the answer to the next question, which is, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
Writing. Yeah, right. The best thing to develop new ideas. I would have to say that when I make the time to sit down and write, then I always find ideas come. But also being open to them coming at different times that I don't expect. Like sometimes, you know, you wake up at 2 o'clock in the morning with an idea. So being ready to notate the ideas. And I think valuing whatever idea comes to you and not judging it, just really valuing it and putting it down and just appreciating that it came to you.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. Don't be judgmental about ideas until you've outlined them a little bit, and then go to evaluation later.
Yeah, well, how many times, like, an idea comes to you and they go, oh, no, I shouldn't call that person. They're not going to really want to hear from me. Or I don't know if that's going to really work. And I've really been learning, like, if an idea comes to me, I just think of it this way. Why would that idea come to me if there wasn't some reason for it to be there? It's got to come for something.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, like, my ideas are like, you know, gems that even if I don't exactly know what they're for, they're worth exploring and being curious about.
Mm, yeah, that's a really great suggestion. All right, so what's your favorite tool or your favorite system for improving your own productivity and then allowing you to be more creative?
Time. Making time. Making time to sit down and do that. I find that I can get easily, because I do so many jobs and I'm a parent of two kids, that I can get very distracted. And I find that I have to really allocate time in order to make that happen.
Hmm. Yes, well, time is the most precious commodity we have, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We can't make more of it. We can't get it back once it's spent. And we all have a limited amount.
Yes, during the day and at night. Yeah, well, yeah, I guess so.
In total. I mean, we all have the same amount in a given 24 hours, but yeah.
But it's also how you look at time. It's also how you perceive time. If you, again, take every moment to be precious and worthy, then you'll have the time to do what you need to do.
That's right, yeah. All right, what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Making it very clear from the get-go that you are going to help them be accountable, setting dates and times that they need to produce their work, keeping in touch with them. And I think also being a very positive force in their life and being very encouraging of the fact that they can meet these deadlines, guidelines, and so forth.
Yeah, I love that. The attitude part of that as well as the accountability and communication. Yeah, really good advice. So, and what's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Be themselves. I mean, we're all different. We all have our uniqueness. So it's just about, what's that great saying? You know, be yourself because everyone else is taken. I can't remember who wrote that one. Somebody, you know.
Yeah,
we're all,
that's
who wrote that? I don't remember. I'll have to remember after we get off the podcast.
Yeah,
but I love that line. Be yourself because everyone else is taken.
Yeah. I don't remember who wrote that one. There's another one from Dr. Seuss, which is no one is youer than you.
I love that. I don't know about that one.
Yeah.
No one is youer than you. That's a great one too.
Yeah.
Well, and I think, you know, we've all grown up very much in a non-worthy society. We're kind of taught in a lot of ways that we're non-worthy. And I think that we forget that we're all individually unique, beautiful, incredible souls that are here to share our uniqueness with the world. And I think we've lost, you know, so much of our culture is about power and money and control. And we've lost the real essence of what we're all about, which is sharing our uniqueness and who we are with everybody we come in touch with, contact with.
Yeah, really well said. All right. What's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business owner who wants to be a leader in their field or a leader in innovation?
Be authentic. Again, be yourself. Leaders are respected because they're confident. They know who they are. And they feel very clear that they have something of value to share.
Yeah, that's wonderful advice. Self-awareness and confidence, projecting certainty that you have something of value.
I think that's what, you know, but authentic value. I mean, I can tell when somebody's selling me a line and when someone's selling me something that's of value. You can just feel it. And I think that's very important, is to really believe in what you're selling, believe in what you're doing, believe in who you are, and that you have something of value to share. Because it's of value to share. It's not so much about how much money it's going to make you or how rich you're going to become, but that you're out there to share value and uplift, you know, another person.
Yeah, that's right. And the value is really measured, as you say, not in the money you earn, but in the change it brings about in the other person.
Yes. And the value, you know, for me, it's always about what can I share with someone that's going to be of value to them? And I mean, the universe is based on a simple law of giving and receiving. It's all about giving and receiving. It's not about one or the other. So to me, it's about when you give, you are just going to, of course, receive. It's a law. So to me, when you're giving, it's going to come back. And that's where I think value comes into play. When we offer value, I feel that then we're going to get value back.
All right. That's great Ellie, I've really enjoyed this. I've been fascinated to learn about your journey. So where can people reach out and say thank you for what you shared with us today?
Oh, my email, which was Allie Skylar, AliSkylar, @gmail.com.
All right. And we'll have that in the show notes together with a link to your blog.
My blog, Sucky to Soulful.
Yeah.
And I've got a page on there for my musical. My musical is called What About Me? And it's right on there on top of the blog site. So everything is put together and they'll be able to see all the different elements of who I am come together in these different writing formats.
All right. So if you just go to the show notes, you'll see all the links for that. And you can listen to some of the songs. I think there's probably about 4 or 5 there, if I remember rightly.
Yep.
And
they can also contact me if they want to hear more songs or read a script or if they're just in bookings. So there's plenty of information there.
Great. All right. Finally, who would you like me to interview on a future Nova Buzz podcast and why?
My dog.
Now, that could be a challenge.
I was thinking about my friend, Lisa Brick, who is an incredible divorce coach. And she actually started out as being one of my mentors many years ago and is now focusing on working as a very talented and sought after divorce coach. So I can definitely get you guys together.
Okay. Well, that sounds fascinating. So Lisa, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us, courtesy of Allie Skylar. So thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights and some of your music and story with us so generously today, Allie. I've really enjoyed this and
I've enjoyed it so much. It was so kind of you to give me the time and offer me the opportunity to share who I am with your audience. So really, thank you for that. I'm grateful.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think it's been really valuable and I'm sure very entertaining as well.
I hope so.
I wish you all the best for the future and let's keep in touch.
Thank you. I'd love that. Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed and learned from that interview with Ellie as much as I did. All the ideas and tips that Ellie shared with us can be found at innovabiz.co/AllieSkylar. That is AliSkylar. All lowercase or one word, innovabiz.co/AllieSkylar. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Ellie there, as well as her website where you can listen to more music from What About Me. Ellie suggested I interview Lisa Brick, a divorce coach, on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Lisa, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the InnovaBuzz podcast, courtesy of Allie Skylar. Stay connected. Head on over to iTunes or Stitcher or Pocket Casts and subscribe to the InnovaBuzz podcast so you make sure you'll never miss another episode. We'd also love you to leave us a review because what you think matters. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions or questions, share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic LinkedIn community at the Transformational Marketing Academy. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMAC. It's free to join. Hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.